Doing now in Kiddushin Chavtas Amud Aleph. Okay, we are up to last time we went through the Gemara that describes the rule of Bris Milah, and Bris Milah being an obligation on the father. And if the father does not take care of it, who's responsible to take care of it? The Beis Din. And if the Beis Din, the court, does not take care of it, then who's responsible to take care of it? The individual. Okay. Hopefully, by the time the Beis Din's responsibility is over, he is no longer officially a boy. So we'll say the individual, the man. Yeah.
Isn't it considered a time bomb positive mitzvah? So wouldn't
no? It's not that. Yeah, I mean, if you do it on the eighth day, but once you miss the eighth day, then it just needs to get done.
Okay.
Yeah, it just needs to get done. Okay. All right. So we are continuing now, and as was mentioned last week. Okay, again, I'm going to reference the. There is one thing that we need to see on the full page, but other than that, I'm going to reference over here. Okay, I'm going to reference the magnified section. So we are down in the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth wide line, smack in the middle of the line. Okay, on the magnified portion, where you have a word which is surrounded on both sides by two dots. Everybody see that? Middle word?
Two colons, rather.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. You are correct. They are colons. But in all my Gemara learning, the Rebbe always said two dots. Yeah. Two dots. I don't know.
Two dots on either side.
Right, two dots on either side. It is a colon, but it's two dots. Okay. So when you have that, even more clearly than the previous time when we had the two dots, which was 1, 2, 3, 4. Five lines up from the bottom of the shorter lines. Okay, there was just a colon. Here we have a word surrounded by colons. Okay, and that word, when it's surrounded by colons like that, it's a quote from earlier. Sometimes it's a quote from the Mishnah. The Gemara is commenting on the quote from the Mishnah, on the passage from the Mishnah, the word from the Mishnah. And sometimes it's a quote from the Gemara. It happens to be that this one, if you go back to the Mishnah, you will not find it, because it was not in the Mishnah. Because if you recall, the Mishnah gave us a whole bunch of principles and told us which of them, women are obligated, men are obligated, women are exempt, men are obligated, they're both obligated, both exempt, whatever it was. And there Rashi told us that all of these things are going to be discussed in the Gemara. Okay, so when we first opened the Gemara, and it asked the question of what are mitzvos Haben al Ha'av, and it came to the conclusion that it's mitzvos that the father is supposed to do on behalf of the son. So it, when it listed them, it was, let me see, did I give it to you here? Yeah, it's about five lines above the first two dots. So it's ten lines up in the thin lines. Okay, so it starts with the line that begins with the word bivno. Okay, so it said that the father, quoting a Bryce, it said the father is obligated to do for his son the following. Lamulo. Everybody with me? It's over here.
Yeah.
Lamulo, to circumcise him. Lifidoso, to redeem him, assuming that the son is a firstborn. Lalamdo Torah, to teach him Torah. Lahasio Isha, to marry him off to a woman. Ulalamdo Umanus, and to teach him a profession. And the Yesh Omrim, which means there are those who also say that he has to teach him Lahashita B'mayim, which basically means to be able to survive in water, to swim. And then Rabbi Yehuda had a comment. Okay, anyway, the point is that the first thing that the Gemara said was, how do we know that the mitzvah to circumcise him is the mitzvah for the father to do, first and foremost, and then following the order, the hierarchy, as we mentioned, based in, and then the individual. So that was Lamulo. So we went through that last week. We continue now with the next thing that was in that list of the Gemara. Lamulo, Lefidoso. Right? If the Gemara were written in outline format, not in this blob, because the Gemara is written in a blob, there's very little punctuation. Right? The punctuation that we have are colons, but they're not really functioning as colons. They're functioning as quotation marks. Okay. If the Gemara were written in outline form, it would have said Lamulo, right up here, right, that first list, a little bit Lifdoso, right, and then down here Lalamdo Torah, And then it would have gone back into each of those things and say, okay, the first thing we want you to see is you know, A, B, and C. And now we're going to discuss A, and then we're going to discuss B, and then we're going to discuss C. But the Gemara doesn't do that. The Gemara gives us pieces, and it says, okay, now you go figure out how to read it. Okay, and it and some of the ways in which the Gemara is formatted help us understand that it's going back to something which it mentioned earlier. And that's what this this word surrounded by colons is about. Okay, now, the first thing which we read, everybody should know where our first pause is for two reasons. Everybody with me? Yeah, I'm at Lefdoso again. It's the word surrounded by the colons, by the two dots on both sides. Okay, so we're discussing now where the obligation, what, anybody want to tell me? What are we going to be discussing now? What's the Gemara going to be doing? Right, it's going to be asking where is the source for the idea that the mitzvah lifdoso, to do pidyon haben, to redeem the firstborn son, is a mitzvah, no, not a mitzvah whose obligation is on the father. Okay, that, because that's what the Gemara is talking about. Okay, so then, so what does the Gemara do? What's the first word? No. No, no, no. You're on the you went to the next line.
Okay.
Yeah. Go back to the two dots and the two dots with the word Lefdoso in between.
Okay.
You got it, Nancy. There you go. Minolan. Minolan. Yeah, 2 points for you. Injury and all. 2 points, okay? Minolan. Minolan. We had that word before. If you go back to the circumcision one, Lamulo Minolan. Okay, and I even gave it to you in the handout. Rabbi Feigenbaum explained to us what Minolan means. Minolan means, from where do we know? A.K.A., what is the source? And the source, usually Minolan is asking for a biblical source. Okay, and a biblical source means a pasuk. And we should know that because what's the next word?
Yechsiv.
Yechsiv, right, which means as it is written. As it is written, as it is written means in Scripture. Okay, now, this is why I gave you this other piece today. So you should look here. The first source, Kol Bechor Banecha Tivdeh. Okay, so where is that from? There's a circle. Where is that from? What do we do with the circle, folks? We go to the Torah Or. But because it's now a wider line, the Torah Or is in the same column as Mesoras HaShas. So it's going to be all the way on the right side. Now, if you're using an art scroll, it doesn't do that. It actually gives you the Pasuk. It gives you a letter there. You don't have a circle. In this Gemara, we have a circle, and it tells you to go straight across.
On Kol?
So, on the word Kol, yeah.
Yeah, there's a circle.
A circle there?
Yeah.
Not a letter? Oh, okay. Where's it telling you to go?
I don't know. I can't see. That's too small.
It's too small. Okay. Anybody? Can you see it here? Is that a magnifying glass? Smart man. That's what you need. Okay. So what's the source, folks? You just have to look straight across the line. And it's in Rashi letters, it will tell you. In the margin. You have to go to the right. To the right side.
Right.
No, to the extreme right. The other right. Rodney, other right. There you go.
I was in the army.
Yeah. You're used to looking in your rearview mirror.
No,
okay.
No,
okay. Okay, the other right. Can anybody find it yet? It's very small letters.
Yeah, it's very small.
Yeah.
So okay. Shmo.
Yeah, there you go. Shmo's?
Gimel.
Lama Dalet. Nice try. Sorry. Okay, I'm not laughing at you. It's a circumstantial, it's a nervous laugh, okay? Shemos Lamedal, which means the book of Shemos, book of Exodus, chapter 34. Okay, so I did a little bit of homework for you, and if you look on the small paper that I gave you, you see the first source, and I made it in big letters, okay, so we can all see. But it's important, the reason why I gave it to you here is because you have to see the nikudot, the vowels, in the way it is in the pasuk. Ufeter chamor tivdebaseh. Everybody with me? I'm on the smaller page handout. Okay, this is the whole puzzle. Ufeter chamor tivdebaseh. That your firstborn donkey has to be redeemed with a sheep. Ve'im losif de va'arafto. And if you don't redeem it, then you have to chop off its head. Not very nice to the donkey. So what's a better thing to do? Redeem it. Okay, anyway. Kol b'chor b'necha tifde. All the firstborn sons that you have, tifde, you shall redeem. Ve'lo yera'u.
What all? Just the first?
No, meaning amongst the B'nai Israel. Yeah, yeah. For all the B'nai Israel, every firstborn that there is has to be redeemed. Ve'lo yera'u fanayre come, and don't come see me empty-handed. Okay? So, now, the details of the mitzvah are not for now. So, that language, kol b'chor b'necha tifde. Now you have to know a little bit of Hebrew grammar. How does tifde, what does the word tifde mean? You shall redeem. Who's it talking to? How do you know that? How do you know it's talking to the Father?
The people who have redeemed the Son, if it's not the Father.
No, but what's the format? In other words, if it were to say, for example, tifdu would be plural. Okay, tifde is not plural. It's singular. Not only is it singular, it's masculine. Okay, so that's the way the Gemara deduces that this is the source, that who's obligated to redeem? A male. And since it says banecha, right, your son, it's the father. Okay, if it just said, you know, kol b'choros tifdu, then it would mean it's the obligation on all the Jewish people to redeem. But it says the fact, banecha, your son, it's talking to an individual. Your son, tifdeh, okay? Okay, and we look this up, and on account of that, having looked up the verse, we also know where the break is, where the next break is. Kol b'chor banecha tifdeh, okay? So now we get to now we're up to the next line. So where's our next break?
Right after the next line.
I'm saying beyond that. So we're up to the word vehecha. All right, so I'll read it. Ready? Okay, with no inflection. Vehecha, delo, pirke, avuha, michayev, ihu, lemifrake, dichsiv, pado. Stop there. Dichsiv. Correct. Okay, so very good. You guys are on the ball. You know how this works. So now we have to break down that phrase. Hecha, delo, pirke, avuha, michayev, ihu, lemifrake. Hecha, delo, pirke, avuha, michayev, ihu, lemifrake. Now, don't tell me that pirke, avuha means pirke, avos. I know it sounds like it, but that's not what it means. Okay, so this is where you have to know what the what words mean, and this is where you would look up, because pirkei, what does it mean? Pei resh kuf yud hey, what does it mean? Well, it's an Aramaic word, and that is it's the Aramaic version of lifados or tipadeh, okay, or tifdeh rather. So what does it mean? I just basically told you what it means.
To redeem.
It means to redeem. Okay, so it means to redeem. So that, now let's look at the other words. Any other words that we know? There are four words here that we have basically seen before. So you should. Maybe, I don't remember if we had vehecha. Hecha. I'll give you a pass on vehecha. But everybody should know dilo. What does lo mean?
No.
Dilo, Dalid in Aramaic is the same as the Hebrew shin, which means that. Okay?
I have nothing.
What?
I have nothing. Shalo?
No, vehecha, well, I didn't say what vehecha means.
No.
Okay? Shalo means that no, or that not. Pirke, we just said what that is. Pirke means
redeemed.
What's avuha? We should all know that one. Folks, father, correct, the father. So hecha, dilo, pirke, avuha. Hecha means. It either means here or where. More often it means where, if it's in the form of a question. But let's just say where. And where the father did not redeem, Mechayev ihu lemifrake. Mechayev, you should all know, it was in the Mishnah, right? Who is
obligated.
Ihu, we also had last week. What's ihu? The second half of the word sounds like the Hebrew. What's who in Hebrew?
He,
correct. Ihu means he. Okay? Mechayev ihu lemifrake. Hecha delo pirkei avuha. If the father did not redeem him, then he is obligated to redeem him. What do you mean? Who's he? Who's the he that's obligated to redeem him?
Himself.
Not the Beit Din. Okay, that was a good guess. But when the Bris Milah fell on the shoulders of the Beit Din to take care of, the Gemara told us that it went, that the obligation goes to the Beit Din. Okay, here it doesn't mention that. So that actually was a very good guess. But on account of the fact that it doesn't mention the Beit Dina, which is what we saw last week, and it just skips straight to Ihu, him, so it's not based on his responsibility. It's only him. But what's the problem? But we're going to ask, what do you think the next question is going to be? How do you know that? Well, no, not how do you redeem yourself. How do you know that what happens to Beis Din? Right? How do you know you go from father to individual? Right? Last time we had a Beis Din, so that's what the Gemara is basically going to ask. But it's not really asking. First it actually just tries to prove the point. Okay, and you all noted this. Dichsiv, so here's the Gemara basically just saying, and here's my argument why it goes from father to the individual. Dichsiv, circle, pado tifde. Now again, where is this? This is a quote. Where's the quote from? Look to the edge. What do you find? Yirches. Okay, Bamidbar Yirches. Okay, so go back here. That's the other pasuk which I gave you. Bamidbar Yirches. Let's take a look at it. Okay, the first line says, Kol peter rechem, every first issue of a womb, l'chol basar, for all basar, means flesh. Asher yakrivu l'Hashem ba'adam ba'abema, yielach. It's crazy, right? All firstborns, essentially all first issue of a womb, of all flesh. Flesh means either meat or skin. Okay? Asher yakrivu l'Hashem, you're going to bring to God, Ba'adam uva behema yielach. In humans and animals, what does that mean? Okay, they're yours to sacrifice? No. Ach, however, pados if that, right. Pados if that, you have to, when you have a double language like that, it usually means something to the effect of, you shall surely redeem. Eis bechor adam, the firstborn of the humans, veis bechor behema tmeya tifdeh, and the firstborn of the behemah tmeya. The easiest translation for behemah tmeya is a non-kosher animal. We'll just leave it at that. Okay, tifda, you shall redeem as well. Okay, because we saw what happens if you don't redeem the donkey, you chop off its head. What a waste! Whereas if you don't redeem an animal, a kosher animal, it becomes a korban, and that is not a waste. In the same way that just killing a donkey is a waste. Okay, so what do we have here? Pado sifdeh. Pado sifdeh. So that's the source for the idea that if the father doesn't do it, you, the individual, have to redeem yourself. Okay? Any questions on that? Not one? Where does it say that? It doesn't say. It says, Ach pado sifdeh, ispachar adam. You have to redeem the firstborns of the... Is that really a proof? You're all happy with that proof? Ashanda, you should not be so accepting. The Gemara lies to you sometimes. I'm just kidding. It doesn't lie to you. But it tells you something and it doesn't substantiate. I mean, eventually it does. But that's how you process the Gemara. Where you say, what? How does that prove it? That doesn't prove it. It basically said the same thing. It just threw in the word pado. Right? Before we said, Bechor banecha tifdeh, and here it says, Ach pado sifdeh. What does that mean? How is that a proof? Anybody want to try to take a stab at it?
Even all animals and all firstborn. Animals.
Well, what's it trying to prove? Remember what the question, I mean, there wasn't a question, but it was an implied question. Okay, that their obligation goes from the father, if he misses his opportunity or doesn't take care of it, then it goes to the son. So maybe the word pado, the extra word pado, tifdeh, what does pado mean? What does pado mean? It means you have to redeem. What does tifdeh mean? You shall redeem. Right? I mean, they basically mean the same thing. the double language usually just, you know, strengthens the instruction. So the Gemara takes it a step further, because what the Gemara is going to do, what the Gemara essentially does is it plays a word game. Okay, what's the word game? Well, first we have to address another question. Okay, and then we're going to get back to understanding the word game. The other question is, we say it goes from the father to the individual, right? But this, the whole question that we had was mitzvos haben al ha'av. What are mitzvos haben al ha'av? Remember, that's the it's right. What?
Well, that's the mission. Yeah.
That's the
premise.
The premise, right? Exactly. In other words, this is something. This is the overriding theme that we're trying to address here. The mitzvos of the mitzvos haben al ha'av, mitzvos that have to be done to the son, are only on the father. Because remember what the Mishnah said. Mishnah said mitzvos haben al ha'av, that the man is chayiv, the man is obligated, and the woman is exempt. Well, the Gemara is going to have to explain that. Okay, so we already saw about bris milah that it's not an obligation on the woman, and we gave that explanation because it says kasher tziva oso Elohim. Right, it said that God commanded Avraham, commanded him, did not command her. Right, so there is an indicator of that idea as well, that when it uses this masculine language and it's specific, then it's only masculine. So the question is this sufficient? Is this sufficient to say? Because maybe you can say, you know what, pado tifdeh, or pado certainly is. I don't know that it. I mean, maybe you can make the argument that it's, you know, that it's masculine, but you can also make the argument that it's neutral, and that's really what the question is. And so we get to the next word. Okay, where's our next break? We're on the beginning of the next line, because padotif that we know is the end of the quote because we looked it up, right? Meaning it's not the end of the quote, but it's the end of the quote that the Gemara brings for us. So we know that padotif that the last two words of the previous line were the part of the pasuk that the Gemara quoted, because we looked it up. So the next word, therefore, is the Gemara continuing to talk. So where's our next major break?
Is it after the before? No?
What?
Before
Dechsiv, right? Okay, right. So that's for sure. Now, you could have made a very legitimate argument that we should have a break after the word Minolan. Okay, except that we saw last time that Minolan does not always end the question. Sometimes Minolan is just an assistant to the question, and it follows with more words. So here we have Ihi Minolan de lo Mifkadei. Okay, now we had the word Mifkadei before. Actually, we did not have the word Mifkadei before. We had Pirkei, and we had Padotiv De, but these are, I'm not sure why the Gemara is using different words to that effect, but this is our question. It's asking essentially what's ihi? Knock off the first half, what do you have? He. What is he in Hebrew? No, he is she. And that's what ihi means. Ihi means she. Ihi and she, minolan de lo mifkadei. How do we know? Oh, I'm sorry. No. Ihi is not on the mother. Ihi is on the. I'm sorry. It is on the mother. Okay, let's take a look at Rashi. Okay, because one of the questions which is going to be asked is a question about firstborn girls. So let's take a look, but that's not what's being asked here. Look at Rashi. So on this zoomed in sheet, you have it's the second line in the Rashi. So up here in the top corner. Everybody with me? The ihi minolan delo. Mifkida. That's where we're looking. Ihi. What does ihi mean?
She.
The Hebrew word he, which in English is she. Ihi, she. Imo,
the mother,
his mother. Minayin she'ena mitzuva livdos es bina. That's the question that Rashi is saying. Minayin. From where do we know? She'ena. that she is not she'ein. Aleph Yud Nun means is not. That's Hebrew. Rashi is writing in Hebrew. Mitzuvah, commanded. Lifdos, to redeem. Esbenah, her son. How do we know that his mother is not commanded to redeem her son? Dekevan, because since. De mitzvah sase shelo azman gramahu. Okay, we had that phrase before. Mitzvah sase shazman grama means a positive commandment which is time bound. This is a positive commandment which is
not time
bound. No, he says it's not time bound. Okay, it does have a specific time that it should be done, but what happens if that time is missed?
He says it's not time bound.
Okay, that means it's not time bound. Okay, meaning you can at least certainly make that argument, right? Meaning time bound means that if the time passes, you can't do it anymore. Okay, if I didn't say Kriya Shema this morning by a certain time, then I can't make that up. I missed that opportunity. That's what time bound means. If I didn't shake the lulav on Sukkos, I can't come after Sukkos and shake the lulav. Doesn't count. I missed the opportunity. That's what time bound means. This means, yeah, it's supposed to be done after the 30th day, but if you miss that time, you can still do it. That means it's not time bound. Okay? Bris Mila is more time bound because it has to be done specifically during the day. Okay, which is that's what makes it more time bound. I mean, there are also other reasons why women can't do Bris Mila, but that has nothing to do with time.
Okay.
How did you pronounce the Aleph Yud Nun?
Aleph Yud Nun.
How did you pronounce it?
Ain.
No, but when you were reading Rashi, I thought you pronounced it differently.
Aleph Yud Nun, no. She'ina, because there's a hey there.
Oh, I never saw it. I'll try to find it.
Yeah, there's a hey there. Okay.
She'ina. Okay.
So the last three words in Rashi is Ba'i Kra Lema'uta. Ba'i means needs. Needs. Kra means scripture. Right? It means read, but it means a pasuk. Okay? Ba'i Kra Lema'uta means to exclude it. In other words, the pasuk needs to indicate to us, because it's not a mitzvah saseh shezman grama, for which we have a halacha, we have a halacha category, that women are exempt from mitzvah saseh, which are from positive commandments which are time bound, unless the Torah tells us that they're specifically obligated, which happens in a few cases where the Torah tells us that women are specifically obligated in time bound mitzvos. Okay, we saw. I'm sorry. No, we did not. We did not see them in our Mishnah. Did Rashi mention some? I don't remember. No, he didn't. Okay, that's for a different time. All right. Anyway, but the point is that the ones which women are obligated in are Shabbos, Hakel, the gathering of the Jewish people once every 7 years, and eating matzah on Pesach. Those are time bound, and women are obligated. There are a few others. Okay, those are just a couple of them that I remember off the top of my head. And the Megillas Esther is different levels of obligation. It's also rabbinic. I'm talking about in the Torah,
okay.
Right? I mean, you could say Shabbos candles also. You know, are they're time bound? But that's related to Shabbos, so we can say that too. Anyway, the point being, so Rashi is telling us that the question that's being asked in the Gemara, "Ihi minolan delo mifkada," how do we know that the mother? Ihi, how do we get the mother, the lo mifkada, that she cannot bring about this redemption? Okay, it's a different word, which basically means the same thing. So we've had three words basically talking about the same thing. Pado, which is the Torah word. Pirkei, which is an Aramaic word. And mifkada is also a Torah word. Vashem pakades Sarah. Vashem pakades Sarah. Hashem redeemed Sarah and she had a child, pakad. Okay, so what's the answer? What's the answer? Remember, our question here was minolan. What does minolan mean? Anyone remember? What does minolan mean? Mina, it's like the Hebrew word min. From where? Minolan, from where? In other words, what is the source? What is the source? So minolan de lo mifkida. And what's the answer? Dichsiv. Because the pasuk says, now it does not say here, there isn't a circle here. The circle is not here. So how do we know what the Gemara is telling us? How do we know what the Gemara is telling us? Okay, that is a challenge. That is a challenge. The Gemara says to her, look at what the Gemara says. Tuf Yud Pei Dalet Hey. Tuf Yud Pei Dalet Hey. Is that a pasuk that we had that we've seen? Tuf Yud Pei Dalet Hey. Anybody?
I don't see where that is.
It's two lines below the two dots. Anybody? He said, was that a quote from our? Yeah, so you're right. Tifdeh. That's what the Gemara. That's what the pasuk said. But look in the pasuk. How is tifdeh spelled? In the pasuk. Look at the sword. I gave you the pasuk. How is tifdeh spelled there? Is there a yud in there?
No yud.
So the Gemara is telling us dichsiv. Tifdeh with a yud? Doesn't say that. What does it mean? Take a look at Rashi. Take a look at the top Rashi that I gave you here.
Tifdeh with no yud.
Correct.
No yud.
Yes, you are correct. Okay? So take a look at Rashi. Take a look at the Rashi, the very top. I'm not sure why these are out of order. Okay? Look at what he says. You see, he says, Tifdeh, the top Rashi on the magnification. You see it, the very top thing there. Klomar, Kari Bay, Tuf Pei Dalet Hey. Look at that Tuf Pei Dalet Hey. What do you see there? It's a footnote symbol. What is that footnote symbol?
It looks like a B.
It's a Rashi. It's parentheses. You all see what I'm saying?
Yeah, second line.
Okay, second line in the Rashi.
Right here.
Okay. It says there, Kari Bay, and then you have a little bit of parenthesis, a raised Aleph, Rashi script Aleph, closed parenthesis, Tuf Pei Dalet Hey. Now, what does that parenthesis do? What does that little Aleph do? Okay, so now you have to turn over to the non-magnified side. Okay, and that sends you to what's called Hagahos Habach. It's up here. Up here. Now, I'm sorry, because of the copy, it's not so clear. So I'm going to read to you what it says. This is why you need to have a magnifying glass when you read through this, okay? He says, Rashi, Dibur Hamaschil, Tuf Yud Pei Dalet Hey. Dalet Hey stands for Dibur Hamaschil. Okay, in other words, that's the headline of the Rashi. Is when Rashi quotes from the Gemara and then talks about something, so you'll typically see the quote from the Gemara in bold letters, sometimes in block letters. In this version of the Gemara that I gave you today, it's block letters. So, Dibur HaMaschil, Tuf Yud Pei Dalet Hey, Bechulei, Kari Bei, look what he did there. He gave us the words in bigger letters and nekudos, dots. Kari Bei, Ti-Pa-De. Okay, in other words, what the Bach is telling us, he's telling us how to read Rashi. And what Rashi is telling us is how to read the Gemara. When the Gemara throws a yud in this word tifdeh, what the Gemara is really saying is, read the word tipadeh. Okay? Now, what does tipadeh mean? And this is a classic thing that the Gemara does all the time, where it will say, the word can be read in different ways, and therefore, it's teaching us a few different things. When it says Pado, Pado is on the father. Tifdeh is that Tipadeh means that the person who is next in line to do the redeeming is one who can redeem. What does that mean? Whose obligation is it to redeem the son? So far, what have we seen? the father, right? That was the first pasuk which we saw, the pasuk in Shemos, right? B'chor banecha, your son, masculine, tifdeh, you shall redeem. What the Gemara is saying now is, tipadeh, from the second pasuk, from the pasuk in Bamidbar, ach pado sifdeh, pado means you redeem, meaning you the father, and tifdeh is tipadeh, which means can redeem, can bring about the redemption. Okay, in other words, who is the next in line to do the redemption? The one who is allowed to redeem. Okay, that's the way the Gemara does it. So let's look back at the Gemara. T dechsiv, how do you know that she is not one who does the redeeming? Ihi minan delom ifkada dechsiv, because it says tipadeh. Okay? Tipadeh. That is how the Gemara is showing you how you read it differently. T, because this is a whole grammar lesson, okay? T, the dot vowel, which is an E sound, actually is a different sound if there is an E, a yud following it, versus if there is not a yud following it. And that's how you know from the Gemara to read it differently. If there is not a yud following it, it's more like the I in the letter it. Tif de.
But it's one syllable. Tif.
Right.
It's T.
Correct. It might still be one syllable, but it's a much stronger E sound if there's a yud. So without a yud, it's tif de. If once there is a yud, it becomes T. But T is not going to be followed by a letter that has a F sound. That's basic Hebrew grammar. Because a F, I can't get into the whole grammar, but the rule is that any letter that is a what's called a Beged Kefet letter, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Kuf, Fei, Tuf, if it follows a Tnuah Gedolah, if it follows a what's called a larger vowel, it's going to have a dot in it. Okay, if it follows a Tnuah Ktana, it will not. So a dot without a yud is considered to be a smaller vowel, and therefore what's going to follow it is a fey, tif de. If they throw a yud in there, it becomes a larger vowel. Okay, did I say it wrong?
Yeah.
Without a yud is a small vowel. What follows it is a f, no dot in the fey/pay letter. If there is a yud, it's a tnuah gedolah. It's a larger vowel, and what's going to follow it is a dot in if there's a. One of those letters, one of the beged kepet, right? So beged kefet. So once they throw in the yud, they're telling you that you don't read it tifde anymore. It's tipade, and it's not going to be tipade because that's not Hebrew. It's going to be tipade, and so that's how the Gemara shows you what it means. But we need Rashi to explain it to us, and since Rashi didn't put vowels in, we need the Bach to tell us what Rashi meant. Which is all that. Anyway. It doesn't, meaning when you read it in the Chumash, you're going to read Pado Tifdeh. That's how you're going to read it. Or Pado Sifdeh, whatever. But what the Gemara is telling you is that the word Tifdeh is teaching you, because you can also read it Tipadeh without a Yud. But the Gemara is throwing the Yud in there to show us that there is a different way to pronounce that word. Okay, you don't need the Yud to read it Tipadeh.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? That's the point. So what the Gemara is saying is, dechsiv tipadeh, okay, tifdeh means, now let's find the next break, folks. Okay? Let's see if you can do it. We are 5 words from the end of the line. Everybody, you see me? You see where I am, rather? We said we had tipadeh, tifdeh. Tipadeh, tifdeh. So the reason why we know that that is a stop, it's because it's the most immediate repeat you can have. Okay, it's the Gemara basically trying to analyze this one word from the pasuk. Is it tipadeh? Is it tifdeh? What does that mean? So then we get into our next phrase, and we need to find our break. So again, I'm going to read it without inflection. You tell me where the pause is. Pay attention either for vavs, repeats, things of that nature. Kol shemitzuveh. Lifdos es atzmo mitzuveh lifdos es achirim v'chol she'eno what?
Liftos again.
Okay, good. There's a repeat of Liftos. Good. That is correct. That is going to be a pause. So let me go to that second Liftos for a second. So I'm back at the beginning of the line. Mitzuveh, Liftos, es, acherim, v'chol, she'eno, mitzuveh, Liftos, es, atzmo, eno, mitzuveh, Liftos, acherim, v'ihi, minolan, delo, mechayve, lemifrak, nafsha. Anybody find any pauses yet? Yeah, there's a lot of Liftoses. Good. Okay, they're good. Liftos is a good one. There is a vav in the middle, right? Remember, v'chol she'eno mutzuveh. That's important because we started this whole thing with saying kol shemitzuveh, and now we have v'chol she'eno mitzuveh. That's a classic thing that the Gemara does, where it makes a contrast between one who is and one who is not. The Chol Shemitzuveh versus Chol She'enu Mitzuveh. Now, we don't have to know what the other words mean. As long as you see Chol Shemitzuveh and you see Chol She'enu Mitzuveh, and you know that Eno means is not, because Aleph Yud Nun is a negation, then you know that there's going to be a contrast here between the one who is and the one who is not. That's a pretty simplistic Hebrew rule. Okay, and then when we get on the next line to ve'ihi minolan, that's also a repeat because we had that question before. No. Ve'ihi minolan.
That's the same line, isn't it?
Yeah. Correct. Okay. All right, so we're going to get to the ve'ihi minolan de lo mechayves, but if we have time. But let's get through what we did beforehand. Okay, so I'm going back to kol shem mitzuveh liftos atzmo mitzuveh liftos acherim. Pause, because we have a vav, which follows it. Vichol, okay? So we have to break that down. Kol shem mitzuveh liftos es atzmo, mitzuveh liftos es acherim. So Alan, you were correct that liftos is repeat, but what else is repeat? Mitzuveh. What is mitzuveh? Okay, you have mitzuveh liftos. You have that phrase twice. Kol shemitzuveh. I'm back over here. Look here. Kol shemitzuveh livdos es atzmo, mitzuveh livdos es achirim. Okay? Kol shemitzuveh. Anyone who is commanded livdos to redeem es atzmo, himself, mitzuveh livdos achirim, is commanded to redeem others.
Acherim is others?
Yes, acherim are others. Okay, what does others mean?
But they're Jews.
No. No, meaning one's child. Okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay? So padosivdeh means, what we learn from tifdeh is tipadeh, that you can redeem yourself. If you can redeem yourself, you can redeem others. So this is how the Gemara is kind of, you know, it's cross-track. It's saying, look, you can redeem another. If you're the father, you can redeem the child. Okay, and what we learn from Padosif Deh is that you can redeem yourself, Tipa Deh, because you're allowed to redeem yourself. And if you're allowed to redeem yourself, then you can redeem another. Who's the other?
Your child.
Okay, that's what it means. Why it uses the word Achirim is, I don't know. But it's because the Gemara is just applying it in another direction, and instead of saying your child, it says you can redeem others.
No.
Okay. V'chol she'enu mitzuveh liftos es atzmo, and anybody who is not commanded to redeem himself, eno mitzuveh liftos acherim, is not commanded to redeem others. Okay. So what's that exemption basically doing? Right, that's basically saying if you're not commanded to redeem yourself, then you can't redeem another. Okay, the truth is that the Gemara, it didn't have it here, but that's one of the teachings regarding Bris Mila as well. Now, it's true that halachically, a woman, for example, can circumcise a boy, okay, halachically, but the Gemara, the Pasuk rather says, himol yimol, himol yimol. Himol yimol, which again, when you have that double language, we would translate it to mean, you shall surely circumcise. Himol yimol. But The Gemara also says Himol can also be read Hamal, that one who is circumcised ideally should be doing the circumcision.
But a woman could?
A woman could, but if there's a man who is equally competent or more competent, he should be doing it. Why? Because he's circumcised. I'm not knocking, okay? God bless them, they should do well. There are a few women mohalots out there, not in the Orthodox community, they just don't get business. But one of the things that they put on their website is that because I am a mother, I am more sensitive and more gentle to the plight of the child, and therefore I am a better candidate. Listen, if your skills are good, you know, fine, no problem. But you're also forgetting the other thing that the Gemara says, that himol gimol hamal gimol, that, again, I'm not knocking the skills, and I'm not, and God bless you, you should make a nice living and all that, but you're not a man. So it's, in terms of candidates, halachically speaking, unless you're the best out there, which is not, you know, there's no way to prove that, then it's less ideal halachically. Okay, but whatever. Well, you know, we'll leave that for this. But here, we're going back to this question. If the man can redeem himself, then he can redeem others, meaning his child. And if a woman is not, can't redeem herself, or she's not commanded to redeem, I mean, it says atzmo, but she's not commanded to redeem herself, so she's not commanded to redeem others.
Well, others in plural meaning children.
Yeah, I mean, others is plural, but it means, you know, the firstborn males, which for every woman there's only one, and for every man, well, it depends how many women he's got. Okay.
There could be but, four.
Right, there could be more than one. Right. Okay. So I don't want to leave this hanging, so let's just finish with the next question. Ve'ihi minolan delo mechaiva lemifrak nafsha. Why do I know to stop there? I'm stopping there. Why? What's the next word? What's the next word, folks? You with me?
No.
We're six lines from the bottom. Six lines from the bottom. Fourth word on the line. With me? V'ihi. What's ihi?
She.
Minolan. From where do we know? Dilo. Dilo is like shelo. That she is not. Mechaiva. Obligated. Lemifrak nafsha. So lemifrak we've had. That's one of the words which means to redeem. Okay? Nafsha. What's nafsha?
Herself.
Her soul, but meaning herself. How do we know a woman is not obligated to redeem herself?
Dechsiv.
Tifdeh. Tipadeh. Okay, the Gemara just goes back to the same idea. Kol she'acher mitzvah l'dosu, mitzvah l'dosu s'atzmo. Kol she'ein acher mitzvah l'dosu, mitzvah l'asmo. Ein mitzvah l'dosu s'atzmo. Okay? And then the next line, we'll go back into this next time because we're basically done. But I'll read it to you, and then we'll break our teeth over it next week. Minayin she'ein acher mitzvah l'dosu. I'm on the third to last line. How do we know that others are not obligated to redeem her? D'amar kra, kol b'chor banecha tifteh. If you go back to this pasuk that we have here, folks, look here. What did it say? Kol b'chor banecha. The firstborns of your banecha. What does banecha mean? Of your sons. Because it says very specifically and explicitly, your sons, and it doesn't say that you have to redeem the first of your daughters. This is how we know that the males have to be redeemed and not the females. And therefore, you know, using all those different arrow charts that we're showing, since you don't have to be redeemed, you don't redeem. And since it's only sons, and therefore it's not daughters, and therefore it's not mothers, and therefore it's not girls, the Gemara basically is using these two psukim to...
It's like this, and there's so a lot of proof. They're trying, I mean, there's a lot of different examples of why.
Right, but you see how the Gemara... Also, sometimes, depending on which question it's specifically asking or trying to answer, it will hone in on a different word in the pasuk. So we had the word tifdeh, we had pado tifdeh, we had bechor banecha, because look, the fact is, in the other pasuk, down here, for example, it says pado tifdeh is bechor ha'adam. You have to redeem the firstborn of the human. What does that mean? It could be the male or the female, because Adam is a neutral term, is a generic term for humanity. So that's why we have another pasuk which says, Bechor Banecha, the firstborns of your sons, to tell us that, yeah, Bechor Adam is referring to sons. Even though it says Bechor Adam there, it's in the context of comparing humans to animals, but it's only referring to the firstborn males that have to be redeemed. Okay, we'll get back to these last few lines next time, but I didn't want to leave us hanging in terms of the question that the Gemara is looking to address. Okay, but again, the main thing that we see here is we're looking for keywords, we're looking for repeats, we're looking for to figure out and to discern where the question is, we're looking to figure out and discern where the answer is, we're looking to see with a keyword like minolan, what pasuk is being used. We have to know where the quote from the pasuk begins and ends, and the easiest way to know that is through actually looking up the pasuk, and then once we are familiar with the pasuk and what the pasuk is saying, then we can slowly pick apart how the Gemara is using it to answer its particular questions. And of course, depending on how well we understand the flow of where the Gemara is coming from with its questions, we can more easily understand the flow of its answers and just the way that it conducts this conversation, trying to knock out proof after proof while answering objections which may come up simply because of the logic and the flow that the Gemara has. And through our paying attention to the language and to the structure, we can see where the Gemara is going with it and how it does anticipate the questions that we might anticipate, but sometimes before we anticipate it, the Gemara has already asked it. So it's a two-way process. Remember, the Gemara, as somebody once said, when I daven, I'm talking to God, and when I'm learning Torah, God's talking to me. So we can make the argument over when, through reading when we hear the Torah being read on the in shul, that's God talking to me. When I'm reading Gemara, we can make the argument over who's talking to me. Is it God, or is it the rabbis of the Talmud who are talking to me, and they're transmitting the word of God that had been transmitted to them? So let's take that latter approach, that they're sharing with us everything which they know, but they're bringing us into the Beis Medrash, and they're saying, let's have a conversation, let's talk about it. And that's why when we make our way through the Gemara, we're following the questions and the answers to see how we can best come to understanding of what the law is.